Time now for NHL Hour with Bill Clement and Commissioner Gary Bettman. NHL Home Ice, XM 204.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is Gary Bettman. I happen to be here at XM's Toronto studios today. During our show, Bill Clement will join me from New York. We'll be joined by Colin Campbell, our Senior Executive Vice President and Director of Hockey Operations. Bill Daly, the Deputy Commissioner, happens to be here today as well. We'll take your calls, we'll answer your emails, so stay tuned. It's all coming up live in a few minutes on XM 204 and NHL.com.
Inside the National Hockey League, this is NHL Hour on NHL Home Ice, XM 204.
And welcome to the NHL Hour. I am live, it is no longer we, at least for this week, live from the NHL store powered by Reebok on NHL Home Ice, XM 204, as well as NHL.com. We want to get to your phone calls as well as your emails. Here's the phone number. 877-NHL on XM. That's 877-645-6696. The email address is nhlhour@nhl.com. Bill Clement in New York. Gary Bettman is in Toronto. The season pushes into the second half. Unprecedented competitive balance in the NHL. It's all good. We're closing in just a little over 2 weeks away from All-Star Weekend, which will take place in Atlanta. And the NHL has an office in Toronto. They have one in New York. And Gary, you either have regular routine business in Toronto or some kind of beautiful juicy scoop for us as to why you're there. Which is it?
No juicy scoop, unfortunately. Oh. We also have an office in Montreal, not to omit the good people who work with us there. Do you miss me?
Absolutely.
Okay, just checking.
Always.
Bill Daly's with me in the studio, as is Colin Campbell. We had some meetings today in Toronto, business meetings. And as you said, we're up here on a regular basis. It's fun to be here. It's a great hockey market, maybe the best in the world. And we have obviously a lot of interest in what goes on both north and south of the border.
Bill and Coley are with you now?
Yeah, you can talk to them.
Well, okay, guys, let's just get this straight. Who keeps whom out of trouble?
Oh, I have to answer that. They both keep me out of trouble.
Gary, how much time do you spend in either the Toronto office or the Montreal office?
I'd say we're in either office at least once every other week, easily. That's me. Bill probably does the same, if not more. And Coley, as I think everybody knows, is based in Toronto.
The big news from an ownership standpoint in the National Hockey League is that Craig Leopold, who recently got out of the ownership business with the Nashville Predators, is back in as part owner of the Minnesota Wild. Had this been in the works for some time, guys?
Not really for some time. Since Craig just sold the Nashville Predators, I think he got serious about this after the sale went through because he decided he was going to miss being an owner. He's been a terrific owner in this league for the 10 years that he's been here, and frankly, I'm delighted to see him come back. What do you think, Bill?
Yeah, I think Craig is obviously a fantastic owner in the National Hockey League, has been for Nashville for 10 years now, and I think the league's lucky to get him back.
And I think it's good for Minnesota because he is passionate about the game.
Gary, both you and Bill have to deal with owners. Bill, as the deputy commissioner, your office has to deal with ownership on a regular basis, to say the least. From the commissioner's office standpoint, and Coley, you can address this as well because it comes to you through the general manager's office. What constitutes a good owner from the commissioner's office standpoint?
Well, I think there are two aspects that we focus on primarily. One, how an owner puts together his organization and how the team functions in its market, and how consistently competitive the team is, and you know, the type of organization attitudinally that's been created, how well the fans are serviced, and how good the community feels about the team are all the elements about what makes a good team in its market. Secondly, is do you think about the game and the league when you're making the decisions that have to be made as an owner? You know, everybody's competitive. Each team wants to beat the other team to make the playoffs and ultimately win the Stanley Cup. But in the final analysis, are you going to be a good partner in the league? How are you going to work with the other owners in the league? And are you going to make decisions that, even if in the short term may be to the detriment of your team, you're prepared to do for the good of the league?
Coley, you're the guy that has to. Go ahead, Bill.
I'd agree with that. I'd focus on that second item, which really what distinguishes a great owner from a good owner is his ability to see with longer-term vision, the bigger picture, and what's good for the sport and good for the league.
Coley, you're the VP of Hockey Operations, and please go ahead and correct me if I ever get anybody's title wrong. Yeah, you have to deal with GMs more regularly, I assume, than owners. What makes a good GM from your standpoint? Maybe the guy that never calls?
Yeah, we like those guys. we had a few that left in the last couple of years that made our lives a little bit better, too.
What does that mean, Colin?
Yeah, are we naming names?
No, we're not.
Specifics, Colin. Okay. We won't name any names, particularly the guy that just spoke yesterday, but... Anyways,
Coley, you can be on this show anytime you want. You know that, huh?
This used to be the NHL Hour.
Gary told me to make this show worth it. So, anyways,
you're swinging for the fence, brother. That's all I know.
Right. Am I still employed, Gary?
Last time I checked.
Right.
Let's see. We still have 50 minutes to go. So,
right. I think the managers who. We have managers that do their homework very well and deal with us on managers who we find that make calls based on games night in and night out. I think, you know, there's lots of pressure on this group of people, and they react accordingly in some cases. And I think it's best for a manager if his organization allows him to look at the big picture, meaning not only this year but next year and the year after, and not to react in a knee-jerk manner every night. We get calls, our own calls, I should say, in a game, whether it be penalty calls, goal reviews, that they're tough some nights. And for a manager to react and want to know why we made a call, you got to look at the big picture, and I think I can understand those calls in the first round or second round, or particularly the fourth round of the playoffs. But over an 82-game schedule, I think the manager we appreciate is a manager that understands that we just want the best for the game and the league, and we know he's under pressure, but hopefully he gets the opportunity to act in a long-term, long-range manner for his organization, not on a panic every night basis.
Well, and I also think, Coley, and you can disagree with me on this without getting into trouble, that a lot of what makes a good owner also makes a good manager. You know, every team has got a certain chemistry, a certain talent base, is put together in a certain way. But when the managers come together, particularly a general manager's meeting, those who look at what's good for the game, not necessarily what will be good for their team this season, really makes a good manager as well. And I think our managers group as a whole has been terrific as being custodians of the rules of the game. They look at the big picture.
Yeah, our managers have reacted fairly well over the past two seasons since we came out of the lockout. We made a lot of strong rule changes, and I think the effect, particularly the first year of the rule changes, was tough on some teams. But if you look at the managers, you know certain losses and certain games, certain nights, it might affect their job, and they get lots of critique from the media. They get lots of help, as we do in our jobs, from the media on doing their jobs. But I think, as Gary mentioned, they do a good job as far as caretakers of the game. And I've had a couple of calls in the last few days just about our standard, where it's going, what they feel. And they don't want us to knee-jerk it, but there's certain changes or certain aspects to some of the calls that we see are changing over the course of a season, but we have to make sure that we handle that accordingly, that there's no big changes during the season that we make on the ice. But they just wanted to alert us that they feel that the game is going a little bit in a certain direction that they think we better put a halt to soon.
So, Bill Clement, anything else you want to know, or should we take calls? Your choice.
If you're ready to go, I just wanted to know from Colin if there's a central theme to any of the messages that you're getting about the officiating or the rules right now. Is there something that's repetitive that will be addressed in the off season?
Well, Bill, you see enough games yourself that when we first came out of the lockout, the adjustment that we made regarding the hooks and the holds, it's those calls late in the game, those calls when you're in 5-on-4 situation that weren't normally something that we saw prior to the lockout, and
right.
Or calls in the playoffs in the third period, right to the point where maybe you might get two or three calls in an entire playoff game, particularly in the finals, that we had to change to allow players to skate and play the game. Well, there's always pressure on those calls. So, for example, one area that we've had some discussion with lately is the dump in by a player and then the interference by the defenseman, not allowing that player to forecheck or go in and chase a puck. And we have to be careful how we react to that. We just can't change it overnight and change the game for all players, because you're talking about 750 players have to deal with that change. So we have to know how to change that and how to deal with it and how to deal with it properly.
Gary, all set? Callers ready?
I'm all set. Before we do that, one other franchise note that's worth telling everybody if they haven't heard is I think people may have known there was a lawsuit in British Columbia over whether or not Francesco Aquilini and his family were entitled to continue ownership of the team, the Vancouver Canucks. And there was a dispute by some people who claimed that they should have been Francesco Aquilini's partner and that maybe they should be the owners of the club. That lawsuit, I am told, was dismissed today, and there's now no longer a cloud over the ownership. Francesco Aquilini and his family are the owners of the Vancouver Canucks, and I think that's good news for Canucks fans, because he's been a real good owner for that franchise since he's taken over the whole thing from John McCaw. So, but let's go to the callers. Let's start with Teresa in Alberta. Teresa, you there? You're on XM204. How are you?
Pretty good. How you doing?
Great.
What I would like to know is not if, but when are the Winnipeg Jets coming back to Winnipeg?
Well, the Winnipeg Jets are now the Phoenix Coyotes, and I don't think they're planning on leaving Phoenix anytime soon. But if your question is when might there be a team back in Winnipeg, we don't know. And the reason for that is we're not currently planning on expanding, and we don't have any teams looking to relocate. However, if that should change, if we decide it's time to expand, or if there's a team that needs to relocate, we're going to look at every possibility. And I think Winnipeg is certainly a place that will get a good look in consideration, because I think that we know that there are terrific hockey fans in Winnipeg. There's now a new building. Mark Chipman, who owns the AHL franchise in Winnipeg, has expressed interest to us. I was quoted at a press conference, I think, in the Stanley Cup Finals as saying, I'm intrigued about the possibility at some point considering going back to Winnipeg, because under the collective bargaining agreement and economic system we now have, it may well be that a team could make it now in Winnipeg. It's not something we've studied. At the appropriate time, we'd have to take a good look at it. But obviously, if we could go back and write something that happened a few years ago and put a team back there, if it all made sense, if it all could work under a situation where we were either relocating or expanding, that's something that might make a lot of sense. So I can't give you a timetable, but obviously we know of the great interest in Winnipeg. Why don't we go to Nick in New York? Nick, you there?
Hi, Mr. Commissioner. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us on XM204.
So it's actually kind of fitting that I called today, considering Colin Campbell's there talking about goal replays, because I had two quick questions. First of all, I'm a technology consultant, so I get into a lot of these little things, but I'm wondering, with all the disputed goal calls, have you guys considered any kind of wireless technology to try to, you know, assure if a goal actually crossed the line, so you kind of eliminate that element of chance and you take out a lot of, you know, the dispute factor, because you can then indisputably tell that it crossed the line. And my second question is, I'm a diehard fan of the New York Islanders, and I know we are currently looking into renovating our arena. And I was curious if the NHL had any kind of an organized effort to try to help teams that want to make renovations or build new buildings and have to deal with overly bureaucratic governments.
I'll let Coley answer the first question. I'll take the second.
Goal reviews and any sort of wireless aid to help us confirm whether the puck's totally across the line or not. We'd like to have that. We're actually Mike Murphy, who works with me in Toronto, is working with a firm out of Detroit right now. In fact, Mickey Redmond has brought the idea up, and they've been going back and forth on a technology that might determine this. I don't know how you do it. You've got a layer of ice over a layer of cement with pipes underneath it, but it's something that we'd love to have to determine if that puck is completely across the line. And we've talked to other people, but right now there's no system that tells you other than the human eye and a number of cameras. We are working on also, we've replaced all the overhead cameras in all the arenas. They're high definition overhead cameras. We're looking at changing the mesh on the top of the net so we can get a better view of the puck to determine if it's entirely across the line. But it, right now, a lot of this is human, and there's no real wireless technique that we could depend upon.
Well, I think also in fairness, Coley, we spent millions of dollars over the summer to put in HD equipment to get a better look at the goal. And out of the 7,000 or so goals scored in the course of a season, the number that are really disputed are less than a handful. I mean, people will dispute it in terms of who they're rooting for, but in terms of where we're comfortable that the right call has been made, the number of times where we think we get it wrong is probably less than a handful. Wouldn't you agree?
Right, right. No, we see it as you mentioned, Gary. We look at these things so often that we hope that we're getting fairly bulletproof to these type of replays. Now we've seen so many over the past 4 or 5 years and how we're doing them, and in fact I just showed Gary and Bill today in the Toronto office a new communication system. We're still trying to iron some of the kinks out of it, but we're able to have a three-way conversation between our room, the video replay room in the arena, and the referee on the ice to make sure we're discussing the same exact aspect to every replayed goal.
With respect to the second question, obviously the Islanders need a new arena. They need it yesterday. Charles Wong and the Rexon Group are committed to developing the area and renovating or building a new arena. That's something that each owner does in conjunction with the governmental entities in the local marketplace. We're there to lend assistance and support, but in the final analysis, it really is the club that has to work with the local authorities in order to secure a new arena, and we're hoping there's a new one on the island as soon as possible.
Kind of a full house today. Gary Bettman as usual, but Bill Daly and Colin Campbell are also with us. Hang in there if you're on hold. We're going to get to as many of your calls and emails as we can when we come back. It's all on the NHL Hour on NHL Home Ice XM204 and NHL.com.
Hey, Gary, it's Scott Lockman from Hockey This Morning. Congratulations on your new program. Best of luck. Welcome aboard. And we'll be listening. Welcome to NHL Home Ice XM204.
And that's exactly where we are for the NHL Hour. Part of this show actually is coming to you from the NHL store powered by Reebok in downtown Manhattan and part from the XM studios in Toronto. This is our NHL Hour on the phone number again, 877-NHL on XM, 877-645-6696. The email address, NHLHour@NHL.com. I'm Bill Clement. I'm in New York, but we have NHL Commissioner Gary Bettman, as well as Deputy Commish Bill Daly and Senior Executive VP and Director of Hockey Operations, the man with the longest title of the three guys sitting in Toronto, Colin Campbell. That makes you very important, Coley. You know that, right?
And it makes him very popular.
Actually, two jobs, it sounds like to me.
Hey, Bill, Bill Daly, yep. Before we move on, why don't you explain to people what the deputy commissioner does?
That's a very good question. It's a tough question to answer. I get asked questions a lot by a lot of people, and that probably could be the toughest. No, I do a lot of different things in a lot of different areas. I'd say primarily I'm responsible for administering both the collective bargaining agreement with the Players Association and with our Officials Association, and probably principally responsible for the relationship there. But I dabble in other business areas as well, and I'm supposed to be able to do everything you don't have time to do.
And you do it well.
Well, thank you.
Hey, Coley, what is it that you do besides suspend people and review goals? Being everybody, that's the stuff that gets the most publicity. Actually, before you answer that question, for those people not as old as you and I are, tell people what your history in hockey has been. Trace it back to the Peterborough Petes.
It doesn't go as far back as Bill's does, but...
Whoa, hey. Little respect here, Coley. Come on.
Yeah, I'm showing respect here, Bill. You're the historian here that has the most history.
I'm the fossil.
That's right. Peterborough Junior, 3 years. I got to play in the World Hockey Association my first year. Moved on to Pittsburgh. I was in the NHL as a player for 12 years. Retired in Detroit. Was an assistant coach with a number of people, Jock Demers for about 5 years. From there, I moved on to New York and was assistant coach with Roger Nilsson for 3 years and Mike Keenan for a year. Coached in Binghamton for over half a year in the American Hockey League, then moved on to be head coach with the Rangers for 4 years and then moved into this job.
Holy cow. So you've done it all.
That's longer than my title.
It is.
You're the only guy in the room that has a business card that's 5 inches long, though, Cole.
That's exactly right.
You know, you were rumored over the last few years for every opening that there's been for a general manager. What's the biggest difference in the job you do now and being a general manager in terms of how you relate to the game?
I think you can look at the game. We've been given the opportunity in this job, and I think Mike Murphy will say the same thing. His career almost mirrors mine as a player and in coaching. It's the fact that we have the opportunity to draw upon our experience and look at the game in a number of different ways without having to live and die wins and losses every night. And wins and losses will drive you nuts, and we see some of the coaches on the benches going through those tough long nights, and we don't envy what they're going through. We miss those nights when you can sit down and have a cold one, Bill, after a good win, but you don't remember those as well as you remember the tough losses you experience. And right now when you look in the NHL, even though it's good for the game, there's teams that one night of the week they might be in fourth place, fifth place, and then a week later they might be in 10th or 11th place, and they're dying. So I guess that's probably the biggest difference from your team hockey life to the league hockey life is that you don't die with wins and losses, and you hope that you can use your experience to make the game better.
But don't you miss the adrenaline release, good or bad, from the wins and losses?
I think everyone misses that adrenaline. I was coming out of a situation where there was less adrenaline and more pain, and that normally comes when you lose at the end of your career, as I did with the Rangers for, you know, it wasn't that long. I mean, we went from the third round of the playoffs, and we had a tough December and January, and I was out in the street in February. But it's been a real good experience working with Gary and Bill and the people at the league and with the managers, and we have the opportunity to work with everyone involved in hockey, and we've gained a heck of a good experience, a broad experience regarding the game of hockey, and we work with everyone from the college people to the junior people to the international hockey, officiating hopefuls, all our officiating staff. The experience here has been incredible that you would have never got just staying within your little confines in the dressing room. And it was amazing once we got out of that dressing room confine that we found out there was a much bigger world in the game of hockey.
Speaking of a bigger world, let's go back to the calls. Let's take Pete in Detroit. Pete, you're on XM 204. What can we do for you?
Well, Mr. Bettman and gentlemen, thanks for taking the calls of fans. That's really great. I'm calling you from Detroit. We're very proud of Chris Osgood and also Manny Legacy, but here's my question. Fans in Detroit think they've done their fair share in helping to promote the NHL in the West. When are you going to let us out of purgatory and play the teams that would help fill Mr. Ilitch's building, like Toronto and New York, Philadelphia, Ottawa, and so on?
It's a good question. Hockey Town is great. The Ilitches have done a wonderful job consistently building a winning competitive team year after year. And the only way that Detroit can go east is somebody's got to go west. And I don't think that there are any volunteers. So something would have to change in terms of franchise location or relocation or expansion, or something would have to happen that would cause us to be in a position to add another team to the east.
Although, obviously, with the change that we made in the schedule this year, which was approved by the board in November, you'll be seeing a lot more of the Eastern teams and a lot more of the traditional rivalries in Detroit in the next couple of years.
But that's a good question, and we appreciate it. Let's go to Andy in Florida. You have a question?
I have a few, and it's a pleasure talking to every one of you.
Okay.
First of all, Mr. Campbell, I enjoy watching your son play on 41 nights a year. He works real hard. Also, the question to Mr. Bettman is, during the NHL All-Star game, when we got the privilege to host it down here, we had talked and we had a special season ticket holder meeting, and I asked a question where, if the salary cap was to come around, how is this going to help teams like Florida? And you said that it would make them very competitive because they're going to be on an even keel. Now, 6 years later, or I should say, well, it's been 6 years since we've made the playoffs down here, and we seem to have an owner that doesn't want to meet your standards in spending the money to make their team enough to go over the top and actually make a playoff run, because it seems like we're always on the bottom of the low end of the totem pole when it comes to the salary cap. My question to you is, can we make owners who are constantly on the bottom, why can't we make owners spend the money on, just if they don't want to do it every year, that's fine, but have a cap to where they have to be at a certain level of the cap that you're asking them to do? Because a team like Florida is just going to sit here and be on the bottom and sell all their ads and give free tickets to games, because that's all to get to a game in Florida right now. All you have to do is walk up with a voucher. It's a mess down here, and I think you know that.
Let me try and respond to the question, because you're obviously a passionate fan, and for that we're grateful. There is a minimum that every team has to spend. There's a salary cap range, and every team has to be within $16 million of from bottom to top, and there's nobody who's at the absolute bottom right now. What we think the system has done that's in effect is taken out of the equation how much you spend. You should be able to be competitive. Now, we're 2.5 seasons into the system, and each team was at a different point of its evolution or creation or development, if you will, in terms of where it was going and how competitive it would be. Florida, for the most part, has a young team, prospects like young Mr. Campbell that you referred to and a whole host of others, and they're in the process of developing. This is a team that's being built for the future, and I think 2.5 years into this system, you should be a little patient, or I'll hope you'll be a little patient, because it's not about what you spend. It's about how you put the team together, and I assure you, nobody wants to win more than Alan Cohn and the other owners in Florida. But that is a good question. Steve in North Carolina, you're on XM 204. What can we do for you?
Hey, guys. As a fan in a small market and in the southern part of the United States, like the previous caller, I'd actually like to commend you and the work you're doing in your work with the PA as well on everything in the league right now, especially from the fan access standpoint. And I actually have a suggestion. For your upcoming All-Star game, this morning they were talking about the new wrinkle, the NHL's version of the slam dunk competition, I guess they were calling it, one-on-one against a goalie. Just thought for more connection with youth hockey, more fan access, make a sweepstakes next year. And I'm not a goalie or a goalie dad, but make a sweepstakes for maybe a Bantam midget-level goalie to get a chance to go in there and let one of those Robbie Shrimp type moves be made on them. That's just a suggestion.
We take all suggestions seriously. Let us give it some thought. My gut reaction is it's intriguing. Next caller, Chris in New York. You're on XM 204.
Hey, Gary. I'm actually with a friend right now who's pretty bitter about Hartford, the Whalers leaving Connecticut. But I've been staying trying to make hockey fast the game, you know, the favorite skill players, and it's kind of pushing out the fighting element of the game. I was wondering, since the fighting element's kind of gone, I've seen a lot of dirty stick infractions and hits from behind. I was wondering if you took away the instigator penalty and made fighting majors 4 minutes instead of five, fighting would return to hockey, and maybe it would decrease the stick penalties and the dirty hits from behind, like on Bergeron and, you know, with the Simon incident about hitting people in the face with sticks. You know, I think he'd think twice if there was a couple of cold Norris out there, you know, patrolling the ice on every line.
You know, I've answered that question a number of times. I'll take Coley's take on it. Go ahead.
I've answered it probably more, Gary, okay. But sometimes I just wish we could take the instigator out, but that's not going to do. That's not the answer today. Colton Orr might have survived and flourished in the 80s and maybe early 90s, but the culture is as it is in the National Hockey League. Is players may run around and do what they want to do, but they'll pick and choose when they want to fight, and that wasn't the case in the 80s and in early 90s. And for us just to give the credit card, a free credit card for players to exact justice on themselves, we're going to end up with Bertuzzi instances again. You're going to players jumping people and slam dunking people, and we can't have that. Also, as I said, Colton Orr may want to exact justice the way he thinks he should exact it, but he's not going to get those sort of instigators and aggravators that come along and do what they do. They're just going to turtle, the hockey analogy for covering up after they do what they have to do. So I think the instigator penalty has worked very well. Our managers think it has worked very well, most of them. And I don't think that's the answer that you're seeking. Things happen when you have 1,230 games a year, another 100 in the playoffs. And I think we've done a good job in controlling that. But it is what it is. It's an aggressive sport, and players will cross the line, and we punish them fairly severely.
Thank you.
Want to let everybody know that if you miss part of this show and you want to hear the whole enchilada, the replay of the show can be downloaded tomorrow. Just go to NHL.com or iTunes to download the podcast, and that will be up tomorrow. Commissioner Gary Bettman with us, as he is every week. Deputy Commissioner Bill Daly in the house today, as is Senior Executive VP and Director of Hockey Operations, Colin Campbell, back with your calls and emails on the NHL Hour on NHL Home Ice XM 204 and NHL.com. Hey, we only play the commissioner's favorites here on NHL Hour.
Bare Naked Ladies, you hit a home run there. By the way, if you remember their concert at the Minnesota All-Star Game in the snow, may have been one of the all-time great entertainment events. And they're a great band.
Some of us were working, though, Gary. You got a chance to stand out there and watch them, no, right? No, you saw the whole thing?
It was when the weekend was over, and they're big hockey fans. Hey, let's do a couple of emails. They're both addressed to me, but I'm going to pawn one off on Bill Daly and the other on Colin. This one's from Mike in Amherst. It's about the Winter Classic, and it says, as far as the fanfare at the Ralph, that's Ralph Wilson Stadium, for those of you not from Buffalo, is it what you expected? If it was, are there any plans to improve the NHL fan experience at outdoor games going forth? Bill?
Well, obviously, I think it was a fantastic event. We're very fortunate that we were able to accomplish a lot of the things we wanted to accomplish with the event. The fan response was fantastic. Our partner, business partner response was fantastic. So it's obviously something that's intriguing on a going forward basis. We actually have a lot of debriefing to do as an organization, and we're going to start that process. Well, we've already started that process, but we're going to further that process tomorrow, actually, in New York. We have a big debrief meeting on the Winter Classic, and hopefully we'll get some guidance going forward and make those decisions in the near future.
Great. Now we have one from where? I don't know where he's from, but I'll read the email anyway. It's from a Joe, and it doesn't list where he's from, but you'll like this email, Coley. The Bob Clark nonsense and the fact that Downey was not suspended for the sucker punch needs to stop. You, meaning me, and Colin Campbell, meaning you, need to take a stand and clean up the game and the old goon time owners. The fact Bobby thinks Blake deserved the punch shows the Flyers organization is stuck in the 70s and they have not learned from the suspensions or fines. This is a little different from that last caller we had. What is your take on this, and what are you doing to correct the mistake of the suspension to Downey not happening?
Well, that's his opinion, and we get lots of opinions, and we get lots of help in doing my job, and there's some help right there. But I'm sure some people from Philadelphia, and I have had emails from Philadelphia, that they felt the hit on the defenseman for, help me out, Frank Brown, the defenseman for Philadelphia that came from Atlanta, the big kid.
Braden Coburn.
Thanks there, Billy. I don't know if you saw it, Billy, but he was hit into the glass. And yep. It was a hit, yep, by Kabina, and we didn't get much focus on that hit, but we try to allow tough hockey, and players are allowed to fight, and sometimes they cross the line, and we looked at it fairly thoroughly, and we have a number of people who work in our video review room in Toronto that have been around the game a long time, Mike Murphy, Jim Gregory, Chris King, Kay Whitmore, that have played, coached, managed, and we beat these topics up long and hard, and every time we make a decision, we certainly don't get 100% approval across the board. So I had a good conversation with Steve Downey along with Paul Holmgren, and we'll see what the future holds for the young man.
Great. Let's go to Mark in Washington. You're on XM 204.
Gentlemen, it's great to be on the phone with you. Just want to let you know I think this is a great program, and the chance for us fans to be able to talk with the guys who are running the league, it's a real treat.
Well, thank you for calling in, and thank you for being a fan.
Great. I wanted to direct a question to all of you, but I guess, Bill, you're the closest thing to an actual goal scorer on the panel, so I'm interested to hear what you have to say, too.
Coley took great offense to that.
He did. He's cringing on that one.
Coley was the quintessential defensive defenseman. Come on.
You know, Coley had two goals in one playoff game, Bill.
I think I had two goals that year, too.
I rest my case, Bill.
I used to clutch and grab Billy a lot.
Yes, you did.
Anyway, let's let Mark ask his question. Go ahead.
I just want to ask, I go to a lot of games and I watch a lot of games on center ice, and I know that, you know, the league is always looking at the challenge of in making the game more exciting and increasing the scoring, and I know there's been some talk about doing some things that some people feel are fairly radical to the game, such as increasing the size of the goals and changing the way that the goaltenders are equipped. But what I'm seeing when I watch the game that I think might be something that might be able to help the goal scoring without – radical changes, I'm noticing a lot of goaltenders freezing the puck outside the crease. There, and it seems to be getting more and more where I see a number of goaltenders who are splayed out on the ice several feet outside of the crease, freezing the puck, which, of course, limits the ability to score some of those goals down low. And I would like to see what you guys would think about calling that a little more, if you see that, having the referees calling that as a delay of game and allowing some of that to go on down low in the crease and possibly increasing scoring in the league.
You're not the first person to suggest that, and that's something that I think we'll be discussing with the general managers and the competition committee. It's a very astute observation. Kevin in Montreal, you're on XM204. What can we do for you?
Hi, Mr. Bettman and crew. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you for calling in.
My question was the comment that the head coach for Ottawa Senators made about an elbow to the head is not always a bad thing if you accomplish what you want to do. I wanted to know if the NHL would be paying any special attention during the playoffs for malicious headshots, knowing there in the last couple of years, head injuries have been really bad in the NHL.
Well, the three of us in Toronto are looking at each other because none of us has seen that quote. And I'll let Coley add to what I'm about to say. We believe in protecting heads. We do not want gratuitous shots to the head. And if a player actually does that to another player, he can expect to be punished.
Well, I don't think we watch every game and every shift closely, and there's a couple of players on the Ottawa Senators. I'm sure the elbow to the head last year of McCammon in the playoffs versus Anaheim. I don't think he appreciated the elbow in the head, and he got another rude awakening in the exhibition game too, McCammon. But I think that regardless of what. I guess you said the coach did say, I haven't read it or heard it, but things are said, guys are partially quoted, but it doesn't matter to us. We watch what we watch, we see what we see on the ice, and we deal what we have to deal with, and everyone knows the standards we have set. It's fairly clear. We did a lot of work on this past summer. We talked to every important group in the NHL, from the officials to the owners to the managers to the coaches, and a lot to the players, and we got input from every group on where we should be with head hits and what's proper in the game, what's accepted and what's not accepted. And I think we've done a fairly thorough job. Again, as I said, depending on what city you're in, you might not agree all the time.
Hey, Coley, let me ask you a different question, and because most people probably don't know the process. The fans get to elect the starters for the All-Star game. What's the process that we go through, that you go through, in rounding out the rest of the All-Star teams?
Well, we for the past couple weeks, we've been thoroughly going over every roster and every team. I've talked to probably at least 20 general managers in the past 3 days on different players in their team. We like to see at least one player, if possible, from each team represented in the All-Star game. And that may not happen depending upon injuries here in the next week before the All-Star game, 2 weeks. But we look at everything from their stats to their each player's stats to that player's contribution to his team, from the team that wins the Stanley Cup last year and the team's in the finals to teams that are doing very well this season, to having true All-Stars as well, who are All-Stars year in and year out for the game represented. So we try to get a good cross selection of every player of the players in the league to make sure the All-Star game can be as good as it can be.
Doug in Pennsylvania, you're on XM204. What can we talk to you about?
Hey, good afternoon, guys. Gary, you're the greatest commissioner in sport, and I appreciate the opportunity to talk to you. I love what you guys do. that's the good news. I got a tough question for you.
Sure.
The Ice Bowl was a magnificent event. It was a proud event, and I loved it. I'd like to see it all over the country. But one of the things that really concerns me, and I believe it concerns a lot of hockey fans, and I know you guys probably heard this a million times, the Chris Simon incident. Simon's a repeat offender who's a violent person. He's been violent on the ice several times. You guys have had him, have talked to him. He might get an opportunity to come back into the league. What happens if he does something to seriously injure or possibly kill somebody on the ice? Why would we risk some somebody who's had six or seven suspensions. Coley, I'm a Ranger fan. I respect what you do. But why would we risk the chance of him coming in and doing something he's obviously capable of that puts our game that we all love in a very risky, precarious, ugly light? Why do it? I just don't get.
That's a very good question, and we were drawing straws to see who had to answer the question, and I think each of us is going to take a crack at it. Coley, you go first.
Well, that is your opinion, and I agree with a number of things that you bring up and say, and at the same time, we get input from the Players Association, and they should be representing their 700 constituents, and they get lots of opportunity to discuss. They're part of every hearing, and they get opportunities to discuss what's right and what's wrong and get input on the length of these suspensions. And because, as you know, for the most part, as you bring up, it's players versus players a lot of time in these incidents. So and I had that very conversation with the Players Association about the length of this suspension and about the repeat offender aspect of this suspension. Some people don't know it, but there is a considerable financial penalty to these players. For example, Keith DeChuck, 1 year had two fines in excess of each fine was over $400,000. He ended up paying close to $950,000. So there are more penalties than you think.
And before you deprive somebody of the ability to earn a livelihood in something that they've spent years working towards, you better be very careful. You better be very judicious. From our standpoint, Chris Simon got a very, very severe penalty. But if he were to do it again, I hate to think about what it may be.
Yeah, we don't argue with the premise that if you keep making bad decisions, at some point you're going to lose your privilege to play.
Gary Bettman, Bill Daly, Colin Campbell, thanks for everything today. We'll see you all next week, 4 p.m. Eastern, right here on Thursday afternoon.
For these people to get on the phone, do they have to say that lead-in?